Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
I am Hercules Invictus.
And Athena Victory.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to the Voice of Olympus e-radio show here on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight we have a special guest. Actually, we have two special guests. Mm-hmm. And the show is divided into two segments, which are hosted differently, which is a first for us. So this is an experimental show. And we're honored to have on Circe the Enchantress on the first half of the show. Recently, I was on Exploring the Bizarre, which is hosted by Timothy Beckley and Tim Schwartz, who are two of the leading lights on the fringe paranormal map of our culture. And they had Circe on as a fellow guest, and we talked about the return of the ancient gods. So we had started a conversation on that show on equality between the sexes here on Earth and up in Olympus. So I thought that would be a wonderful way of ushering in this new era on the Voice of Olympus. We're going to start off with a myth, and this is the myth of Hercules' ninth labor. As you know, Hercules was pledged to perform 10 or 12 labors, depending on who you read, for his cousin Evrystheus, who was the king of Tirynthia. And for his ninth labor, he was asked to get the belt of Ares from Hippolyta, the queen of the Amazons. And this was for his daughter, Admete, who wanted it as a plaything. This was a holy thing to the Amazons, so Hercules went anticipating trouble. He didn't find it, however. He found that the Amazons were fine with him taking the belt in exchange for his stud services, because the Amazons raided and took men for that purpose. And Hercules was famous and had good genes, so he agreed. And they retired to Hippolyta's tent. And that's when, again, depending on who you read, either Hera or the Greeks or the Amazons or a combination of all three sowed suspicion amongst the Amazons and the Greeks, and they started fighting. And what started as an easy and honorable and agreeable exchange became a bloodbath. So that is, of course, a metaphor for the problems that happen in communicating between the sexes, even today, thousands of years later. So without much ado, let me bring Circe into the conversation. Yasu, Circe.
Yasu.
Thank you for coming here and joining us tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Now, we found who we were very early in life. My wife found out in high school. Would you like to tell the story? No? Okay. And I found out earlier than that. And basically, by the time I was in high school, I was dressing the part and wandering around New York and having adventures. How did you first discover who you actually were?
I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. And I was approached by my brother, actually, who handed me a book on magic. And he says, I think this is something you're looking for. It was noticed at a young age that I was able to read people, manipulate things, change and create an illusion of around with objects, move things, and they were, my brother was, he noticed that because we shared a room together in Brooklyn. And so he handed me this book, and I started reading it, and I said, yeah, I know this already. Why do I have to read the book? And he says, so you know this? I said, yeah, this is easy stuff, to mix herbs or to do this for a potion. Yes, I understand that stuff. And he says, well, then maybe you're a sorceress. Then maybe you have a talent, and you should explore this. So many years I ignored it, and then by the time I was in high school, junior high, high school, I was able to tell people that things were about to happen, or even help them with problems that they were dealing with when there was confrontation, and it usually involved a friend having a problem with a boyfriend or something like that. I was able to speak to the male and to the female, and they sought an understanding after I had spoken to them, and they were able to reconcile their differences. So
that is very awesome.
Yeah, my friends always thought it was weird that I was able to. They said I charmed the guy to listen, because usually they were the more of an aggressor, and everybody would be calm when I would talk to them, and then all of a sudden they would, yeah, we see what you're saying, and then they would be friendly again and be able to talk out their problems.
Did you have the other part of the mythic ability where people's true selves revealed themselves in the myths? They reveal themselves as animals, like some men were lions, some were bears, but most were pigs, according to the legend.
Right. Yeah, most men are. Well, yeah, that's why I guess where they get the saying men are pigs. But but so, yes, I do see the animal spirits that are in people, and I'm able to understand what kind of person they are based on and how to talk to them because of their animal that they show.
That is an awesome ability to have as well. We have some classes that we've held here in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania and earlier on in New York that help people get in contact with their power animal. And I would use a visualization of a visit to the cave of Circe on Aea, or her island. And that was always very powerful in drawing forth the totem spirit. If the person wasn't in tune with it before, they would certainly be in tune with it after visiting Circe's cave.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's much like the Native American spirit walk that you would take to find your animal spirit, too. It's very similar to that same idea. Most people demonstrate through their actions the type of animal that they are anyway, but just bringing it out and being able to utilize, nothing is bad, nothing is good, it's what it is. And then the more that you're accepting it of it, you become more in tune with nature and your place within the order.
I've been collecting lions lately who are tuned to the Olympian mythos, and we've called it, appropriately left, Lions of Olympus. And we're going to go after intolerance because I believe that our inability to listen is causing more problems in our current world than almost anything else. So we started these interfaith and intergender dialogues to help encourage people to communicate, to talk, that things are not as mysterious as they are in most people's minds. Life is fairly simple in many ways.
Right.
You belong to a culture, as do I, where magic is part of the fabric of life. I remember in Limnos, the island where my heritage lies, it's fairly common for older people, especially older women, to have access to all sorts of spells. I remember once I got sick and my grandmother called a woman who anointed my neck with olive oil and chanted what sounded like arithmetic equations, and I did feel a little bit better. And things were pretty primitive back then. I went to a doctor, and you had to wait in line with people and animals, too, to see the doctor. And he told me that somebody gave me the eye anyway. So he suggested I go to somebody who, but I already had. I was ahead of the game there. So having that be part of your heritage, having that be part of your culture, must have added a lot of strength and color to your magic.
Absolutely. My grandmother, even when I had visited her when I was very young, if anybody felt that they had gotten the eye or any ill will, she would have me come to them and speak to them and touch them, and then they would feel better. Also chamomile. She would always have us do a tease with chamomile. So that, and she taught me the way to steep it and to use the steam as well as the actual juice, the drinking of it, to use in healing.
Yeah, chamomile and foscomile, mountain sage, are the two Greek purels, you know.
Right.
And now, thanks to my Big Fat Greek Wedding, it's so Windex.
I hate to say it, in my family, it was camphophonique.
Really?
That dates me right there.
But we have these magical, powerful, talismanic things. I spent some of my early career working in human services, and I belonged to the Greek American Behavioral Sciences Institute for a while. And back then, Greeks were very mistrustful of mental health. And the belief was that if you went to Greece or if you got married, everything would be okay. You know?
That's right. Yep.
So I used to go around to hospitals and nonprofits and talk about this for a while. Now, other than being yourself, which brings energy and power to the world, because the world needs those who can manifest and embody the archetypes, how does your magic manifest? You'd shared on Exploring the Bizarre that you work with jewelry and you work with reading people. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. So the jewelry I make is not something that you can just say, yes, that I'll purchase that one and move on. My jewelry is very specific to the person and to what they need at the time. So if they are in need of protection, or if they're needing of healing or clarity or any type of thing, the jewelry is made in specific to that. So the beads or any of the medallions that would be put on would be specific to what they are looking for. And it would have to be done where I can see them. If I need to read them, I would have to be in their presence. It's very unclear to me when I do it over the phone, because there can be something interfering. If I'm in the same room with the person, then I'm able to see who they are and what is around them that could be harming, or that what they need, or actually trying to speak to them. And they may not be aware what's speaking to them, and that could be causing them the harm, or trying to alert them to something.
And this, you need to be in proximity with the person, physical proximity, to be able to do this. And you are in the greater New York metropolitan area, so you're accessible to many millions of people.
Yeah, I often see now, the one thing, I had gone to a county fair here in upstate New York, and I walked into one of the metaphysical, I guess, selling areas that the guy had his table set up, and I almost about knocked him over when I walked in there. He says my energy was too strong, that could I step out so that he could stand back up.
Wow.
So... Yeah, I don't mean to do those types of things to men in particular or people, because usually women don't have a problem around me, men in other sometimes when they have energies, I affect them where they actually have to sit to talk to me. So it was unfortunate that I couldn't look at his items, but but I was able to at least talk to him. But
I usually get when I go to somebody who's sensitive, where the hell did they dig you up from? And I tell them the same thing. Antiquity.
<Yeah. laughs>
Where
yeah.
else would I come from?
Mm-hmm.
How can people get in contact with you? They'll say they'd like to purchase your jewelry and have it charged. How would they get in contact with you?
Okay, so the easiest way to get in contact with me is through Tim Beckley, who is the Global Communication and Interlight, I guess, proprietor. So that's his business. So if they contact him, he would be able to contact me in that way.
And Tim is on Facebook, so it's very easy to reach.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And I have his email. So before we finish our talk together, I'll dig it out and just so I can give it to people.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of things with mythology. We even do things for kids. We have like a role-playing game and interactive storytelling and different types of activities. We go dressed up mythically and we try to recruit them to go with us on a labor or another and test their knowledge of monsters and how to defeat them and things like that. The role-playing games are kind of like they experience the myths. And we started with the voyage of the Argo back in 2005, and now we're up to the last labor of Hercules. So it's going kind of like in real time. We're unfolding the legends. They've been involved in the Caledonian boar hunt and into the first raid on Troy, into the retreat of the old ones in Magna Graecia. So we do a lot of that in addition to doing more metaphysical things. And two of the things we started recently is one is we transplanted the heart of Artemenos, and Artemenos means sacred space, here to Bergen County, which is where we've been residing for the past couple of years, and it looks like we'll be residing for quite a while longer. So we've been establishing ourselves here, and we've looked into the local mysteries and unexplained phenomenon and cryptid sightings and things like that. So we're aware where the underworld veil is very thin, so we've been mapping out the territory. But I'm looking for psychic folk, especially psychic folk who are tuned to the Olympians. So I would like to invite you to be one of our seeresses, and we'll set up a page for you on the website. And have you on the show when we're discussing things of import to our holy place.
Okay.
And the second thing is because we were attacking lack of communication, are you very much in touch with, they're calling it Hellenismos, even though it doesn't mean what they think it means. Other people call it Greek paganism. Are you in contact with any folks who honor or worship the Olympians?
Not currently. The only people that I know that would be are most likely my relatives in Greece still honor some of the paganistic the gods, the Greek gods. However, my family here has stopped doing that, except for me.
Okay. That's fair enough, and it's understandable, too. My family's always said that I yearned for Olympus since I was a small child, so I'm going to Olympus, wherever they wind up. And it's a very strange thing with Greeks, because Greeks still have, like the Romans, a heaven for virtuous pagans, because it is inconceivable to a Greek that Socrates and Plato and all the other philosophers would wind up in a burning lake. So they have like special places for pagans. And also Greeks believe that you could visit other Greeks in the afterlife, just like you can here, regardless of where they find themselves. So whatever travel restrictions keep other people in their heavens or hells don't apply to us because we're Greek. You know?
That's right. So well, Greeks could do what they want.
That's exactly true. So whenever we have a family get together, and I'm not a very big on family get together type of person, but there's always a mix of people from different religions, different races, different nationalities, different beliefs, because again, we're all tied together because we're Greek. So that's one of the things I really, really like about modern Greek culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, we had started on the show Exploring the Bizarre, a conversation on, Tim Beckley had asked this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he had asked if the sexes are equal in Greek culture. And, of course, the answer is yes and no.
Well, yes, right, because the male is the lead of the family, but the women are the ones who control the man. So in the essence of power, who has it? The men can say the determining yes or no, but it's usually the woman who is the one that enchants the man to get to the yes or no, and they will be the convincers. So they are the leader of the family, and they hold the family together. So the children, they raise the children, they take care of the household, they are the hearth of the family, and support the growth and knowledge, too, within the family history.
Yeah, yes, it's Greece is very strange that way. It's very patriarchal. And yet it's very matriarchal. And depending on which side of the coin you're looking at, you get a very different view over who's in charge, because both and neither are in charge, except where their dominions happen to be and where their seat of power happens to be. Up until fairly recently, and I'm sure maybe even today, I know that money passed through the matriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And through plika, when somebody gets married, being given a dowry and so forth, all the houses, all the lands, all the property came with the woman.
Yeah,
and if it was somebody who was some poor, it would be sheep or cows or chickens or, something.
Right.
But the woman represented that wealth. That was true in ancient times as well. I forget who wrote it, but there was an excellent book, I think Slater wrote it, called The Glory of Hera. And he showed how this dynamic in modern Greeks is very old. It goes back to antiquity. It's even in the myths.
Yeah.
You have the dynamic, that dysfunctional dynamic playing out repeatedly through the entire gamut of Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hera had a tremendous amount of power with Zeus. And he would never dare cross her, although he would do things. Because he was a man, and he would do because he could. However, she also did the same thing to punish or to seek revenge, and she had that power to do it as well. So they were equal in that sense.
But still very dysfunctional. One of the things I like about the Olympians is, like we discussed on Exploring the Bizarre, they are, in a very real sense, our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And we're descended from them, according to all the myths, and there's no reason to dispute that. They didn't use genetic engineering as they supposedly did on Babylon. They used selective breeding, really, and they tended to prefer families, like Hercules was of the Perseus line. And they produced certain individuals at certain times. And we know from Selene and Endymion that they could visit people in dreams and live lives in dreams. So they're kind of like ourselves writ large. They're ourselves more evolved. And since it was possible for humans to be born here on Earth, to live a mortal life, and then to ascend to Olympus and become Olympians, it's kind of like an invitation to find your greatness, to find your God-given talent and cultivate it and really develop that, and that's the key to your success. The Oracle of Delphi might have said, bon metrion ariston, in moderation excellence, but the heroes didn't believe that. They were all about excess. The Olympians were all about excess. So
that's
that's a key for Greeks to remember, that, the gifts that we have, if we cultivate them, if we dedicate them to the community, that's one of the most powerful things we could possibly do.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, even though your family no longer follows the old ways, would you be interested in discussing the old ways with other people and helping to educate them?
Sure.
Okay, great. I will include you in that as well. I think we have one in like 2 or 3 weeks. I'll get you the date and I'll give it to you later.
Sure.
And what do you see? Like, I have an entire future that I can see inside my head. How much of it will happen or not depends on the gods, but I see this entire future and I work on it continuously. How about you? What does the Circe beyond the Circe want for the world? Because obviously she's chosen you as a vehicle and there's resonance within and without, so you're one with her. Does she have a dream for this world as well?
Well, okay. So it nearly drives me insane, actually, because the connections and the interconnectedness and patterns that are seen, it's almost like a web of connections between people, and Circe is making a web to show the interconnectedness of everybody, that if you take one away, you destroy that link. And then the whole web will collapse. So it's almost a joke upon a joke on people. Like, so if you hurt one other person, you're going to hurt someone else. And then there will be a ripple effect because of that. So in the sorcery of it, there has to be a realization and a connection for people to wake up. And realize that we must all help each other in order to accomplish something. Now, whether or not she learned that because she was had to give Odysseus back after the year that she kept him with her, or that she learned that living by herself with her nymphs was a way of showing people that to be isolated is not always the way, but that...
Mm-hmm.
Through your isolation, you can show other people how to be connected to the land, to each other, and to yourself.
And without knowing it, you demonstrated your magical power now, because in my meditations earlier today, the web of life and the interconnectedness of things played a great part. So I thank you for your prophetic skills, and you reinforced what I got internally. So I'm grateful for that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, are you on Exploring the Bizarre often?
No, actually, that was my first event.
Mine as well. I've known Tim. He's not a close friend, and I haven't known him very well, but I've known him over a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I crossed paths with Tim, I was wandering around as an ancient Greek. Later on, when I was doing Thor the Barbarian, because I explore the different iterations of Hercules in different cultures, we crossed paths, and I interviewed him on my show at the time, and I reviewed a bunch of his books, and now we've crossed paths again. So Tim Beckley is a living legend in the circles where I move.
Yes.
And Tim Schwartz is a bit more mysterious. Some people believe he doesn't really exist, even though he's on the show. So I assured them that no, it wasn't Tim using a voice disguise or something like that. He's a separate individual, and yes, he does indeed exist, but those
yes,
are the legends from the previous. Well,
yeah.
Our time is up for this part of the show. I would like to thank you very much. Give my regards to both Tims. And
yes.
I look forward to having you on very soon.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay. Yahara.
Okay. Good night. And thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. That was Circe. I'm looking forward to having her on again. She was an awesome guest. And she's Greek.
Of course.
In honor of Circe's being on the show today, the music at midpoint will be Becca Kelso's Odyssey. No, it has nothing to do with Odysseus or being Greek, but it's the Odyssey. So
okay.
We're going to play it.
just in my head imagine. Foggy day, the half left on it.
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Greetings. This is Athena Victory, and we're starting off this part of the show with a new segment that we're calling the Goddess Power Half Hour. In my explorations, I have actually been in contact with a lot of really fabulous women, especially now that are very spiritual, and they're also getting their message out to the world. They're doing things in their communities. They're helping others, and that's part of what Goddess Power is all about. And I have one of these wonderful women with me tonight. It's Linda Marciniak of the Amber Dragon. Hello, Linda.
Hello. Hi there. How are you, Athena?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. This is a little rusty for me right now because this is the first time I'm doing this. But I'd like to talk to you a bit about the Divine Feminine and the Goddess Within. And I guess my first question to you would be, part of the discovery of the Divine Feminine, and when did you start your journey of discovery?
Well, you know, it's an interesting idea, the concept of starting the journey. I believe that we're kind of born on a particular path, and so our feet are walking it before our mind has a concept of, you know, what we're doing and why. I mean, my mom tells stories of me being a very, very young girl and always being independent and always having kind of my own questioning mind and my own thoughts about whatever was going on around me. And, you know, I guess I've always questioned the concept of, you know, the role of women in our spiritual society, our faith-based society, you know, and just always wondering, like, where are they all and why aren't we talking about them? So I think that, to answer your question, I've been on this journey all my life. I have become very conscious and aware of my role on this journey quite young. I was a teenager when I started to have my first experiences with what I would consider connection with faith, and I started writing and, you know, really addressing the issues that were kind of concerning me, and then I started to kind of speak my truth a little bit, and as I got older, it just kind of evolved. My career, my chosen career path, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I specialize in women in transition and have been doing individual, family, and group work for over 30 years. So I think it's all kind of part of the journey.
I have an echo of some of what you said because I remember from a very early age looking at the gender roles and thinking, nah, something's not right with this. I'm not a June Cleaver type. I'm more like, I was always looking, because we kind of grow up with almost like a pop culture being a different form of spirituality right there, but especially but it's your youngest thing that you're sitting in front of the television. At least that's the way it was in the 60s. And I was always attracted to magical women like Jeannie or Bewitched. And at the same time, curious at the men in their lives like Darren and Major Nelson for trying to repress them all the time.
Well, and yet it was that magical quality that drew the men in the first place, you know.
Exactly. And I was always really, really wanted Endora just to turn Darren into a chimpanzee and just let him go someplace. go forward somewhere. Keep him a chimp for a while.
I always wanted to live in Jeannie's bottle, but I just thought that, you know, getting in and out was going to be a little difficult after a while. But, you know,
well, if
you
could
just
turn
having
into,
that.
I was sorry, yeah, but if you could turn into smoke, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be. It'd be pretty cool. Right.
And I think the questioning, too, at a young age, I think happens with a lot of women that later on get to be very spiritual, that they realize that there's a hope. Like, I think that Midler said in The Rose, she said, ladies, we are waitresses at the banquet of life.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be part of that banquet. We shouldn't be just waiting on everybody else and doing this little submissive role in the background. And when, especially when you start reading history and realizing that the first deities were among the first deities, I should say, were female. And there was goddesses
right.
throughout the world. And it was a huge, on a tangent here. There was many, many different goddesses and many, many different cultures. And it became the basis of almost all the goddesses afterwards. So you see some of the ancient goddesses like Inanna, and you keep going through the ages, and she becomes Astaroth, and Hathor, and Aphrodite. She just evolves through the ages.
Right, right. Yeah, when I was going through my training for Wicca, and one of the assignments that we had during that year and a day was we really had to address a particular goddess and identify, you know, what it was, what aspect of that goddess we had connected with. And I remember kind of struggling because I really didn't see the goddess as one dimension, and I really felt that, you know, in order to do the assignment, what I did was I kind of did a timeline on the evolution of the goddess Diana, and how she kind of morphed with, you know, the ruling political party of the day. And you know, it's just a very interesting concept when you stop and think about it, that, you know, the idea of the mother and the lover and the warrior is really all just kind of, you know, rolled into one in these very powerful women that, you know, were very much admired for their skill sets, but, you know, it wasn't allowed really to be translated into, you know, modern woman and how we behave. But when you look at how the goddess kind of evolves over time, you recognize that that's the key, that's the lesson. So in modern day, we have to kind of, we have to be that warrior, but we have to do that in the flesh of a mother. You know, you have to learn to kind of play to your audience, you know, and so for myself, I've been doing counseling for many years, and probably about 30 years ago now, I had a counseling center that I was working with women individually, and I really saw the power that could come from getting all these ladies together and having everyone share their stories as a kind of a healing, a therapeutic growth step for them. And so I invited a group of women together, and I didn't call it therapy. I called it it was a workshop called On Being Woman. And it was a 8-week workshop initially that grew to a 12-week workshop because the women wanted to keep coming. Mm-hmm. And every week we had a topic that we talked about, whether it was communication or relationship or self-esteem. And then there was a concept of sharing that would go on. And, you know, magically, we would close every workshop with, you know, what would now be considered a ritual or a ceremony where, you know, the women would all participate in some way, you know, in either healing or getting rid of something or, you know, growing something for themselves. And it was a very powerful experience. You know, I didn't call it magic. I didn't call it therapy. I just, you know, tapped into what women wanted to know about themselves. And it seemed to go over quite well. And I ran the workshop for quite a few years.
That sounds excellent. And now I wanted to ask you, because you're very conversant with the different goddesses throughout the ages and you did the year of evolution, was there any goddess that in particular inspired you?
Well, I was very inspired at first by Inanna and Diana. And now as I am croning, I really kind of am appreciative of Hecate. and the role that, that she has played. But again, I believe that, you know, Inanna and Diana and Gaia and, you know, I believe that they're all absorbed into the soul of Hecate. I just think that, you know, we see the image of the goddess that we relate best to at very different periods of our lives. So, you know, at the beginning of this journey, you know, as a maiden, you know, you're looking at, you're looking at Athena, you're looking at Diana, you know, you're looking at the younger goddesses, and then you kind of evolve into motherhood and you take on, you know, that more protective kind of aspect of the goddess. And as we age, we kind of can look over that whole field of knowledge and say, you know, maybe I don't need to kind of be shooting with flames anymore. Maybe I can just lead people gently to the path and use, you know, my voice and my nurturing and my comforting abilities. And so I see Hecate really as somebody that I work very close with now.
And it's interesting, Hecate is at the crossroads, too, in a lot of mythologies, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
And that's
sort
of like at the crossroads of your life. You're looking not only behind you at what was, but forward and also off to the side of you to see what the possibilities are.
And that's, you know, that's one of the nice aspects of Hecate is that she's a very unlimiting goddess because there's so many different opportunities. And it's really up to us. And it's, you know, culturally, I think women have certainly evolved, and we see a more assertive, more powerful aspect in our young women today. I certainly believe, you know, we're not really socializing women to be passive and demure anymore. You know, to your point earlier, you know, we can't just sit back and wait or wish or, you know, hope. You know, magic is about manifestation. It's really about, you know, bending what is based on your will, you know, on your soul and what it's speaking to you. So I see a lot of that as a very important message to women today, that, you know, it's our responsibility to make a change in the world and not just fret about it or talk amongst ourselves, but, you know, to be the role models and to actually go out and make it happen.
So how do you let your inner goddess manifest in the world today? That you go out there and you inspire others? You said you did workshops and...
Well, I do, and I have a small metaphysical shop up in Branchville, New Jersey, called the Amber Dragon, and
which is absolutely awesome.
Oh, thank you. And I sell rocks and crystals and minerals and candles and tapestries. But the heart and soul of the Amber Dragon is the second floor, and that is our sanctuary. It's where I run groups and we do a variety of programs. Hercules is kind enough to grace us, and Athena, you know, you join him once a month and, you know, bring Greek mythology to the dragon. And I do a meditation circle every other Thursday night. We celebrate the aspects of the moon. We celebrate the pagan holidays. I do chakra workshops and Reiki and, you know, anything that's going to bring energy and light and love is really what we do. And when you go up to the second floor, it's really just about sitting in the stillness of that space and kind of reconnecting with yourself. And I think that's my favorite part of you know, the building.
I just love whenever we go to the Amber Dragon, that second floor is just amazing. For the audience home, it has it's like an open space with a very high peak, like I guess almost an alpine roof, you would call it. And
right.
There's skylights.
Mm-hmm.
there's skylights in it, so you could see the trees outside, the sky. And then Linda has this beautiful circle with crystals around it. And you just take your shoes off and walk in. She has blankets and pillows if you're going to can't be on the floor or whatever. And it's such a sacred space that it just takes your breath away when you go up there. And you're like, oh, you get so relaxed almost immediately.
Well, I've been very blessed to have very special souls come to the Dragon. And everyone lends their energy to that space. And we're creating a portal there. And it's a sanctuary for, you know, all comers to just kind of sit in a moment and kind of literally be between the worlds. I mean, there's no agenda. It's just about breathing into yourself. I do a lot of work with guided meditation. I play the Tibetan healing bowls. And so I'm really all about kind of building you up from the inside. I think that's so important. And in today's world, it's such a fragile balance that we walk in. So if you can come to some place where you can just take a deep breath and kind of shed that outer skin and relax for a little while, I think that's a gift we have to share. And I'm happy to do it. And I would, you know, I really kind of open the doors to anyone who is willing to consider that life could be different.
Yeah, I think that with the Amber Dragon and what you're doing right now, everybody, I've talked to people online and stuff like that. Everyone is so stressed out right now. And just to be able to step back, kind of let it go and touch something deep within yourself and start grounding again. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, I think it's
stillness back.
And I think it's, you know, it doesn't have to be labeled. It's, you know, it's not a particular doctrine or belief system. It's really just about tapping into the soul of, you know, humanity. And we all have that. And, you know, there is a flame that burns in each one of us that is connected to each one of us. And I think that anyone who's walking a faith-based path really needs to share that as the message, you know, not get caught up in, you know, what's fine and what I believe in, but really allow other people to grow what they believe in. And I think that's what brings us all together. I see that as kind of the mother role, you know, the goddess role is really to just kind of nurture a culture that supports one another.
And what would you like to see for the future for yourself, especially with your the way you're manifesting the goddess and for also for the Amber Dragon? What do you see happening maybe a couple of years from now, or what would you like to build with it?
I would like to see the community that we are building at the Amber Dragon become a stronger, more consistent community. I'd like to have a lot of healers come together there. I'm looking for others to kind of join me on the path and spend time and bring their creativity and their skill set there, because I think that, you know, the message needs to be, you know, spread in multiple languages, and there's no way that one person can, you know, open all the doors for all the souls. And so I would like to see it become bigger and stronger and really more fluid.
That is wonderful. And if people wanted to contact you to get in touch with you about the Amber Dragon or any of your workshops, how can they get in touch with you?
So I have a Facebook page, The Amber Dragon. I'm also on Instagram, and I post a motivational message every morning. My phone number is on the Amber Dragon Facebook page. I'm also in Witchbox. Or you can reach me by email. I can be reached at oystermoon@msn.com. We're open on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And our workshops run Thursday nights, Fridays, Saturdays, and whenever the full moon falls in the month, we try and do it on the full moon, if not the day before or the day after.
That is great. I'm hoping that in the future, if we get time freed up here, I'd like to go to some of your workshops or maybe sit in on a full moon, because it sounds absolutely wonderful.
Oh, well, we would love to have your energy there, Athena. You and Hercules are, you know, you're wonderful people, and you're doing great work for the community, and I am honored and privileged to be a part of the journey with you.
Thank you, Linda. You honor us. For people who want to get in touch with Hercules or Athena, meaning us, you could go to our Facebook page, which would be under Hercules Invictus, or you could visit our website at www.herculesinvictus.net. We're usually pretty much up for communication with people and getting in touch with us. We do lots of workshops in the area of Tenafly. But we also go far afield, sometimes all the way out to Branchville, too, with the Amber Dragon. Sometimes we're traveling.
Well, I think it's a great message, and it needs to be spread. I mean, the world is, I think the world is looking for some change right now, and I think it's a good, healthy message that is being sent out right here.
We're wrapping up now. Linda, it's always a pleasure to have you on. And thank you so very much for helping us launch this new segment. And are there any motivational words you'd like to share with our audience before you go?
Well, I would just like to encourage everyone to keep an open mind and take a deep cleansing breath before you know, feel the need to respond or react. Sometimes, you know, 3 seconds is the difference between compassion and fire, and I would encourage us all to just kind of take that deep cleansing breath and you know, allow what's going to happen to happen with grace.
Very wise words, well spoken. Thank you very much, Linda. Have an awesome evening.
Well, thank you. Blessed be.
Blessed be. Part of the Crone Wisdom too.
Most definitely so. I promised people Tim Beckley's telephone number, so I'd be very remiss if I didn't deliver before we left. Tim Beckley's telephone number is Mr. UFO 8. That's MR UFO and then the number 8 at hotmail.com. That's MR UFO 8 at hotmail.com. Thanks for joining us, everybody. This is going to be a recurring segment, and it will be happening more and more often. Thank you for joining us on our launch. Everyone from Hercules Invictus
and Athena Victory,
have awesome journeys.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.